Since the dawn of 2009, one TV show has dared to ask the most important questions about the origins of our world. That show is Ancient Aliens.
Yet until now, no one has asked the biggest question of all. Is Ancient Aliens total bullshit?
And that's what our show's about. Finding the truth under the nonsense of one of television's most popular franchises.
This is...
More Like Ancient Falians, a podcast about the hit History Channel program Ancient Aliens, which of course is fortified with all the vitamins and minerals of nonsense you need to get through a life of American television. I'm one of your hosts, Brandon R. Reynolds, speaking for myself and Toby Ball, who of course you'll hear from soon. This is the second part of our conversation with Erica Lukes. In this episode, we're going to talk more about her work debunking all of the aforementioned nonsense. And of course, we'll dig deeper into the mystery of Skinwalker Ranch, perhaps the greatest mystery being that there is no mystery at all, except for how they have devised such tremendous marketing prowess. But before we get into that, let's address something that we talked about in the last episode. You may remember I went on a rant about the scene with the refrigerator and the ice cream tub that had spinach and all of this stuff in it, and didn't seem to fit in the scene. It seemed like an anachronism. Well, let me take this opportunity to introduce a small spinoff podcast we're calling Insignificant Mysteries. It's one of the many branches of the More Like Ancient Falians universe. In Insignificant Mysteries, we're going to solve an insignificant mystery, and in this case, our first one will be, what was the deal with that tub? So what happened was, our intrepid editor, Heather Eagle Ears Wilson, never one to miss a beat, got a picture from me of the tub of ice cream in this scene and did a little deep diving. And guess what, folks? She figured out what it was. And what it turns out is that it is a ginger and greens smoothie from the company Daily Harvest. Now, perhaps you know Daily Harvest from listening to podcasts. It's a big podcast advertiser. Daily Harvest is a direct-to-consumer subscription service. You know, they send you all kinds of organic or organic-adjacent items that come frozen. You microwave them. It's for the busy young person on the go. Anyway, this product was one of theirs. So if you unpack it a little bit, you'll say, okay, well, the Skinwalker episode came out in 2020. Daily Harvest is a company that was founded in 2015. Not surprisingly, its investors include Gwyneth Paltrow and Serena Williams. It's made a bunch of money. Of course, you may recall Daily Harvest is the source of the French lentil and leek crumbles recall of 2022, in which a bunch of people were made sick by one of their products because it had some kind of flour in it that was sourced poorly. This was pretty bad. A bunch of people had to get their gallbladders removed. There was a big lawsuit. So anyway, that's Daily Harvest. Incidentally, the company was bought by Chobani, the Greek yogurt concern, in May of this year, 2025. Now, as we're doing Ancient Aliens, you have to wonder, how did a product from 2020 end up in a refrigerator in Utah in the 90s? It could be that, in fact, Skinwalker Ranch really is a mystical place where there are vortexes that connect time periods, and that somehow this ginger and green smoothie fell through one of these portals and ended up in this refrigerator in the 90s. But our intrepid producer, Heather Eagle Ears Wilson, has another theory. She sent me this.
It paints the picture so well of a somewhat choogy millennial production assistant who pounded a Daily Harvest smoothie on their way to the set that day. And then when they realized they needed to shoot some B-roll and dress the fridge to look like your classic Southwestern family home in whatever era, they said, I've got just the thing.
So I think that's a pretty compelling take as well. In any event, this has been Insignificant Mysteries. And now, on to part two of our episode with Erica Lukes. Here we go. Toby, you can leave for this portion of the program because I'm going to talk about a little something I like to call belief. And Toby, as we all know, is a godless atheist. But I am fascinated by, as someone who was raised Christian and who had a dalliance with that for a while, and then really wrestled with like where belief lives, and then sort of having to deal with historical reality versus faith reality versus these things. And I went one way, and then a lot of my peers went the other way. And, you know, who knows, now they're evangelical or whatever. I'm sure they're fine people. But it was interesting, and it has continued to be ever since that point. Like that decision, which is almost not a decision you make, but it's, you know, it's one that's made at some deep level, or you have to really like unpack things, or there's some criticality that you apply. And so I'm always interested in, you know, what you think about how people navigate belief and credulity and how they, you know, hang up critical thinking skills.
Oh boy, I think now more than ever, we've got a lot of examples of people abandoning critical thinking skills. I think our whole society is full of that, unfortunately. And I mean, it is an interesting thing in the UFO realm because, you know, I mean, in full disclosure, I mean, I really thought that some of this was very real. There was the possibility that these things had happened. And so I had to go through that learning, kind of a quickening to understand, to see, you know, like if you're making a claim, then the burden of proof is on you. And nobody was producing anything that was tangible. Those types of things, looking at or walking by, I remember, you know, going to different UFO conferences and walking by rooms where early in the morning, an abduction, quote unquote, you know, researcher would be leading a group of people through meditation, and really lovely, wonderful people who were being, like I was mentioning, being told that they were special, they were chosen, that they were going to be saved by the blonde, blue-eyed, benevolent Nordic beings. You know, some of these things started to just say to me, wow, you know, this is a cult. This is straight up, this is a cult. And I just saw a lot of good people that needed a place to belong. And I think that we see that a lot now with QAnon and some of these things taking place in our society. I mean, everybody really wants a place of belonging. And if you're a little quirky and nerdy, then you look to the UFO world because it's different. You know, it's like the New Age community in a lot of ways. And so people strive for that sense of belonging. They think that they find it. And then one thing happens, you know, you swallow that pill and then you go down that rabbit hole. And so same way for religion, you know, for any type of belief, it's just, it's a trip. And I wish I had more input on that, but I know Toby's really excellent with insights about that.
You know, it's funny because I've been thinking about Betty and Barney Hill again recently, because I'm actually giving a talk about them tomorrow. And, you know, I think for Betty Hill, like a lot of her identity ended up getting caught up in being like, I was the person who was chosen amongst everybody on Earth. It was like me and my husband were the people who were chosen by these aliens to come and pluck from the highways of New Hampshire. And, you know, I think like even her supporters, and, you know, I kind of feel like I'm a supporter, not necessarily of her story, but of her as a person who I think was sincere and also outside of the UFO stuff did tremendously important work in my neck of the woods on civil rights stuff. She got far enough identifying with that she sort of lost perspective on what was real and was taking pictures of, you know, streetlights and saying they were UFOs. And, you know, you'd read her diaries and talk about seeing like a UFO come and lift a tractor trailer off of this like local highway, which I've driven a zillion times, and like spin it around the air and put it back down again while other cars were going. It's just, you know, it clearly didn't happen. And you sort of wonder, where does this come from? What is she hoping to accomplish by telling this story? Belief is complicated, right? And I think especially when you consider yourself to be sort of at the center of sort of these like larger forces, it can probably be kind of overwhelming to your sense of self.
Absolutely.
So are you hitting any like conventions or anything?
You know, I've been planning my entrance back into the...
Yeah?
I'm like, Jack, we've got to figure something out, because if the two of us walked in there together, we would scare everybody there. Which would be kind of fun.
It would.
But I mean, I'm sure actually it would be a blast to hang out with some people that I haven't seen for a while. But I don't have anything on my radar. I'm trying to figure out if I was going to spend the money to do that, where would I go? Like, I would love to actually, in my fantasy land, I would love to go overseas and, you know, go to a UFO conference in the UK and check it out.
What kind of investigations are you working on now? Can you share anything that's exciting about your current work? And also, relatedly, how wide-ranging is it? I mean, there's, as this episode tells us, the paranormal can be whatever the hell you want it to be. And, you know, this show is doing a fairly heroic job of, like, connecting UFOs to all this other phenomena. You know, so, like, is it scientific? Is it somehow magical or paranormal, as they call it? But yeah, like, what's kind of the scope of your work? What are you looking into? Are there any areas that you're like, no, I'm not looking into that. That's too stupid or too fraught or whatever.
I really love, like, 3 years ago, I started with my research partner, Jack Brewer, Expanding Frontiers Research, and we're a nonprofit, but we do historical archiving, but we also, Jack is an excellent researcher and does FOIA requests and records requests. And we've come up with a lot of really interesting things that connect some of the old time UFO crew with people that were informants or were attempting to be informants, and kind of shining a spotlight on some of the subversive activity of people in the UFO world back in the 50s and 60s. And so we've been digging into that, and I love it. For me, looking at the potential for the intelligence community, not only here but abroad, to use the UFO topic for their own purposes has fascinated me. So that's what I've been looking into, along with also, you know, trying to keep my eye on what's happening with Elizondo and To the Stars Academy and some of the new people that have popped up out of nowhere who are probably pretty well funded by, you know, specific groups to promote narratives. And so I just love looking into all of that. And that's what Jack and I are doing. And it's really fun. But I miss the side of me that could go outside with a telescope and look up and just think, oh, you know, the world is at my fingertips. I mean, I love astronomy, and I will still do that. But I've kind of lost a little bit of that luster of things. And so now I'm digging into a lot of things behind the scenes. And it's fascinating, but it definitely can be a little bit dark at times, but I think what we're doing is pretty valuable work.
Talking about luster in the sense of, like, the childlike sense of the world is magical and all of this stuff is possible, and the more you dig in, the more you're like, no, it's not so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dang it.
Yeah.
You end up like Toby, Erica. Look at that.
Yeah, no, yeah, just a jaded husk of a man.
All he cares about is Alabama hockey teams and that sort of thing.
Alabama hockey. I don't care that much about that. yeah, we're back to Brian Arnold, who seems like something of a badass, said something jostled his bed one night and there was no one there. That's pretty amazing. Winterton's back. He says that he heard voices in his head and he wondered if other people had heard them too, but they were just in his head, whatever. And then he says there are places on the ranch that seem to have invisible presences. And then for some reason, somebody named Lynn Picknett shows up and wonders if this is all one big poltergeist phenomenon. I think that's a question we all have. So David Childress shows up. I kind of feel like they were like, all right, we can't just like completely pass this off to the Skinwalker Ranch people. So we'll have to get some of our luminaries out there for like a cameo. So you had Suklis earlier. Now we have David Childress, who, you know, if you've been following along with us, you're not surprised that he compares Skinwalkers to other mythological tricksters. And then he goes away. We get some strange scientific claims. The aforementioned Jonathan Dover, Navajo Nation Ranger, says something about skinwalkers altering their DNA, which is how they can change form.
Our view on it is that they're manipulating the DNA of their own body.
It's not the way I understand how DNA works, but whatever. Then I got another guy named Larry Sespooch says that the spindles in the petroglyphs on these different, I guess, cliffs that are on Skinwalker Ranch, they're not very specific. It may just be...
No, they're not.
They're not? Okay.
No.
regardless, Erica, they are depicting portals to other dimensions. So there's that.
Well, I don't even think they're doing that, but nope, sorry, Larry. I think, and that's the interesting thing. Again, you've got people that are making up their own narrative when you have people, you know, I mean, people that have been studying this for, I mean, you know, people, anthropologists and archaeologists that have been studying this, and it the spirals mean like growth and change. It means, you know, cyclical time of year. There are all sorts of meanings in jumping to a portal just because you want it to fit your narrative. That doesn't necessarily work. I will say that none of these things are on Skinwalker Ranch. I think they've got one thing that somebody carved in there probably back, you know, 50 years ago that was allegedly the sign of some buffalo soldier, which again is just not even, I'm sure, accurate. But around that area, the Fremont culture, there are many petroglyphs in the area that's actually not quite really very close to Skinwalker Ranch. But, you know, again, it's just, it's adding, making up your own story to fit a narrative, you know, and it's not based in fact.
Well, keeping with that theme, Tsouklas and Childress both show up to talk about that there are figures in the petroglyphs that appear to be ETs because they've got big eyes. Yeah. So I assume we can just cut and paste your last comment onto this piece of claptrap. Then Sess Pooch is back. He has this UFO incident at a place called Dead Man's Curve, allegedly. And it was like a UFO encounter, which his mom had a similar one. And that's about as far as we're going with that. And then we get John Alexander, who is put down as a NIDS advisory board member. NIDS is the National Institute for Discovery Sciences. Erica, do you know about NIDS?
Yeah, NIDS was formed by the Bigelow Boys. And they were allegedly looking into the paranormal. There are very few things you can really find out about what they were doing, and they don't have a lot of published papers online, so it is quite interesting. So, but Alexander has always been a very kind of almost a mythical figure in all of this. He's been close associates with Bigelow and Dr. Eric Davis and Hal Puthoff and the people that are the usual cast of characters, and his background was psychological warfare. And so one has to wonder if he is deploying some of his own techniques with regard to this subject. It's a pretty interesting group of people.
Brandon, he featured prominently in John Ronson's book, The Men Who Stared at Goats.
Oh, sure. Saw the movie. Yep.
You saw the movie. I didn't see the movie. I read part of the book, I think. Anyway, so we get John Alexander like angering people at a MUFON conference by saying there is no government UFO conspiracy. And then he really goes down the paranormal rabbit hole. Okay, back to the Shermans. Their first day on the property, and here we get into the whole security thing. The Shermans see a huge wolf who they pet for some reason. It seems friendly. Whether your reaction to a 6 to 7 foot standing wolf is to pet it, I don't know. But it attacks a calf. And they shoot it 5 times with a .357, but it doesn't do anything. Bringing up the question, why are all these guards walking around with guns? Because they're probably not going to do anything. It takes off. They follow the tracks, which end suddenly. And then, remarkably, I can't remember who does this, but somebody does a wolf lineup for them. So just like if you were robbed and they put a lineup of photos of people and you're supposed to pick out which one, they put out a lineup of actual wolves, and they asked the people to identify which wolf. And for some reason, in addition to the actual kinds of wolves that you might run into, they have a picture or a drawing of a dire wolf that has been extinct for thousands and thousands of years as part of their lineup, which to me seems like putting, you know, like George Washington in a lineup of possible robbery suspects, but whatever. But everyone apparently picks the dire wolf. So maybe it is a long extinct species of wolf that is walking on its hind legs and can withstand gunfire.
I think it was one of the security guards after a couple cocktails.
Well, that could be too.
Yeah, the story there, they pet the wolf. Okay, this giant wolf comes up.
Yep.
As we now know, is a dire wolf.
Yep.
You're on the property. You've ever been around wild animals? If an animal comes up to you and it's big or small, then it's rabid, probably, because they don't like people.
Yeah, it's definitely got rabies.
So then they're petting it, and somehow then it turns and then attacks a sheep. And they're like, wait a minute, this may be dangerous. So then they shoot it, and then it bleeds. So pieces of its flesh flew off, but then it just strolled off, which I thought was just such a bitchy move. Just be like, yeah, I don't care. And off it went. And then all the rest of the stuff happened. None of that. It all felt like a fever dream. I was like, okay, you pet it and then whatever.
And that's a really good point because, like, I mean, first of all, if you're a rancher, you know, you're not going to be, you don't let wolves around your livestock, you know, and you're not going to be petting them. I mean, all of these things do seem quite suspect. And it is interesting, you know, to note that Bigelow made the Shermans sign an NDA. So, you know, you've heard their story secondhand and nobody's been able to verify their story after, you know, all of these years anyway. I will say that my bishop, because I grew up in the Mormon church until I figured that one out, but my bishop owned the property before the Shermans.
Hello.
And his family, Garth Myers, Edith and Ken Myers owned the property for, you know, decades. And then after they passed away, my bishop, Garth Myers, who was a doctor, a really beloved community member, very, very respected man, one of the nicest men I've ever met, he owned the property and, you know, was there quite often. And there were never any stories of paranormal. I mean, that wasn't a thing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a thing, you know, and so it's really easy to make up stories when you've got a couple that comes into the picture that has the property for a small amount of time, signs NDAs. What a perfect cover. But yeah, there was nothing in that area at all before. And even Junior Hicks, who was the guy that started taking in UFO reports back in the 60s, I mean, he told me candidly that there was never anything paranormal that took place in that area either. So it's quite interesting.
It's interesting that your bishop didn't see anything paranormal because someone says on this show that the Skinwalker Ranch most likely has an interdimensional portal on it somewhere, which, as we say so often, amazing if true. Robert Bigelow probably knows what's going on. He put together a team of scientists, did 7 years of research. Eric has already talked about the quality of the research that was performed, and that is that it wasn't even really research. And then Tsouklos, as Brandon has talked about earlier, says, why would Bigelow spend so much money on all that research and then keep the results secret? Either he found something really weird or nothing at all. So I think he pretty much hit the nail right on the head. So then we get a brief section of rumors, which is always fun. Linda Moulton Howe makes an appearance saying that there, and she talks about this alien warehouse rumor, which seems to come up every now and again, like regardless of what you're looking at in UFOs, is that there's a warehouse in Las Vegas filled with alien artifacts that are owned by Robert Bigelow, but nobody's really seen them. Have you been to see any of those alien artifacts, Erica?
No, I'd be really afraid to, actually.
Well, if somebody asks you, I'll be willing to go in your stead because okay. Sounds rad.
Yeah, I would love to see that.
That's probably pretty nice. Eric Bard says that there are rumors of an alien base, alien artifacts, and exotic elements.
They talked about the side of the mesa opening up and a spaceship flying into some sort of underground base.
Sure.
Was this before or after their drone and laser show? I don't know.
Yeah, they don't specify. Somebody asks, is Skinwalker Ranch important for the entire universe?
Well, that would be a hard no on my end, but, you know.
Yeah, it seems very unlikely that Skinwalker Ranch is important for the entire universe.
Some ancient astronaut theorists suggest that there is something even more profound at work, and that Skinwalker Ranch isn't only a special place on Earth, but an important location for the universe.
Yeah, because then it gets into the question of, like, from the perspective of the universe, are there some places that are more important than others? Or is the universe more like, I don't know, it's all kind of the same? It is an accidentally philosophically profound question. Perhaps not begging of an answer, but
yeah, it's not, this is probably not the forum for for a deep digression into that. You know, we talk about this, Erica, frequently, that the end of these shows sometimes just turns into this complete, like, we've got another 7 minutes to fill up, so we're just going to start throwing stuff out there. Just like this total montage of craziness. So George Knapp says that two guys with PhDs saw a ball of light that became a tunnel and a 7 to 8 foot being emerged from it.
Normally 7 to 8 feet.
Yeah. So, but then that's about it for that. And then you move on. Nick Redfern talks about quantum physics. And I don't know much about quantum physics. Like, I've read a little bit about it. I do remember a physicist saying I can't remember if it was a paper or an interview or something, saying that if somebody starts talking to you about something that has happened and says that it's because of quantum physics, they're completely bullshitting you. Like,
shocker.
You know, quantum physics is not going to be affecting things that you can perceive yourself. It's all beyond your perception. So anytime any of these guys talk about quantum physics, it's just like, there's weird shit. And it's quantum spooky action at a distance or something.
Which is the motto for my quantum kung fu dojo.
Yes.
It's kicky action at a distance, Dobie.
That might be a good way for us to make some money on the side, yeah. Brandon.
Yeah, I know. Just
open up a quantum dojo.
Hell yeah.
William Henry, again, trying to get all the stars in here. He says that scientists are now talking in esoteric terms about powerful places where realities blend or blur together.
That would be one of them.
You know, I thought that this started to feel familiar or metaphoric or whatever, and I realized, let me posit a theory to both of you, see what you think.
Okay.
Okay, so they're talking about, first of all, the end of the show also sort of says it's not just a portal, but it's a cosmic tear. You know, at some point, it's like, what's the goddamn difference? So... You know, you got places like Skinwalker Ranch. There's all these weird creatures, these unusual entities that are coming through these portals or doorways or tears or whatever. And then it says it's entirely possible that creatures and beings from other realms of existence could quite literally jump from their dimension into our world. More and more scientists are talking in these extraordinary terms, taking it seriously. But what it seems like to me is that this is the History Channel's very clever way of making a metaphor about the Skinwalker Ranch show coming into the reality of the Ancient Alien show. It's a crossover episode. They're saying the reality that you know, Ancient Aliens, is being invaded via the portal of your television by this other entity, which is the Skinwalker Ranch show. And I think that makes it art, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. That makes it the highest of...
It's a metaphor?
Yeah, metaphorical art.
A meta-metaphor?
Erica, what do you think about that? Does that sound... like the sort of high artistic quality you've come to expect from Ancient Aliens, that they would have that level of commentary?
You know, yeah, that is just blows my mind. Yeah. And absolutely. I don't even know how to put anything into words after that.
Yeah.
Erica's voice is doing the equivalent of someone standing up and walking out of the room in disgust. I've never heard a voice do that.
I'm trying to be so subtle.
There's a similar theory my friend had about the Journey song Feeling That Way, but I'll tell you about that some other time.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus plans November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
All right. Continuing with this ending, Caroline Corey, who is a futurist, Erica's nodding like she's familiar with Caroline Corey, says there's a grid-like structure around the Earth with exit and entry points. And then, as Brandon brought up earlier, tears in the fabric of space allow weird stuff from other dimensions to enter ours. Erica, what is Caroline Corey's deal? Because they don't really give you a whole lot on her.
You know what? I just know that she is on a lot of UFO shows, TV shows. So I don't really know much about her, but, you know.
One of the interesting things, and I don't know, it's probably easy enough to figure out, is sort of the chicken and the egg thing about these people who write these books about ancient aliens. and then appear on Ancient Aliens to talk about, you know, are the Egyptian pyramids actually, you know, power sources? Or they pick up these like different, very specific aspects of ancient alien possibilities or whatever, and write a book about it, and then show up on Ancient Aliens to talk about it. And it seems like this sort of symbiotic relationship where you get enough like talking heads to make it seem like there's like this robust scientific community that's looking into this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, it's just a way to show your books without having to actually go on out and like hold your book right next to you, because they always like identify you with a book. I don't know why I'm calling you out in particular for to comment on this, but I just think it's kind of an interesting sort of cottage industry, I guess.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And it's all Eric von Däniken's fault, apparently.
Oh, Eric.
Yeah, he's an interesting character. He manages to make everything a little bit skeevier than it has to be. I don't know. He was talking about, what was he talking about? Angels having sex with our girls.
Our girls, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. He's concerned about how aliens are able to have sex with humans and stuff. How does that work?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, there's some really interesting people in this subject that probably need to be somewhere safe.
somewhere away from playgrounds.
Yes, preferably.
All right. Is there a scientific explanation for Skinwalker Ranch? It seems like a rhetorical question. Should we even be looking? And most crucially, Brandon, does it hold the key for our ultimate survival?
Doesn't matter, because they never even address the question or the answer. They leave it to you. They go to commercial and they come back and they hope that you have forgotten that they put everything on black, so to speak. And then they're like, we don't know.
Yeah,
we just wanted to get you back.
Just throwing it out there for you.
After the Tide commercial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting because the last little segment is George Knapp claims that Bigelow sold Skinwalker Ranch because it was just too dangerous. Brandon Fugel, who then bought it, brings in a crack team of scientists and engineers to investigate, which my understanding was that was what Bigelow supposedly did. But anyway, they have advanced technology. Most of this advanced technology seems to be cameras, along with a few kind of detectors that look like something from a like 1980s movie.
Geophones, Toby.
Geophones, that's right.
Yeah.
Those things are high tech.
Phones of the earth, you see.
You then get a shot of Dragon Arnold hanging out in a field with a gun for no apparent reason.
Nobody has ever really understood the love of guns. You know, you saw that with the Bigelow days and the security guards out there with their big guns, you know, and probably drinking margaritas and passing out in the bushes with their big guns.
That doesn't sound so bad.
I think that's just like when you're out in the wilderness, when we were in Kenya, like Kenyan park rangers have serious fucking guns. They have guns like these guys have, but they actually are like in situations where they may use them basically against poachers. Anyway, it seems like a little bit of cosplay.
Well, and of course it doesn't matter, because if you get approached by a dire wolf that's normally 6 or 7 feet and you shoot it, it's not going to do anything anyway. It's going to just walk off.
It's just going to walk off.
Shitty little look back over its shoulder. Yeah. So
might eat your calf. Then again, another rhetorical question. Will we wish we left Skinwalker Ranch alone? I don't know. Maybe.
Hell yeah.
And we end with Jeremy Corbell asserting that the phenomenon, which I assume is spelled with a capital P, is real. And that's it. We made it.
We really did.
Skinwalker Ranch. This is just so weird. It's such a weird, like, Ancient Aliens episode, because it really is just a Skinwalker Ranch episode that they, or like a preview that they threw in a few Ancient Alien.
Yeah, it's definitely not, you're right. There's not in keeping with the feel of the whole show.
Yeah.
They put the Skinwalker skin on the Ancient Alien's body, you see. That's another good metaphor. You're welcome.
Was there a return thing where you just have Suklus and Childress and those guys go on Skinwalker Ranch and just talk about ant people and other Native American stuff that they talk about?
I don't know. I didn't see one. I think, it, you know, obviously it's mentioned in a bunch of episodes, but...
Yeah. They have to come back to so much of this stuff again and again. So we've seen a lot of ant people stuff, which I like. I think it's pretty interesting. It always brings a smile to my face. Anyway, any last thoughts on all this, Erica?
Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting, especially living here in Utah. I mean, I have people that come in, you know, my business. In fact, I've had like three this week. Well, are you watching Skinwalker Ranch? And I'm like, oh, my Lord. There's not enough holy water for that. No, I'm not. But so it's really interesting to see how people, you know, I think because it's a Utah thing, everybody is fascinated. Well, not everybody, but a few people are fascinated in the topic. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's, at least with the show, it's a bunch of guys, a bunch of white guys standing by a mesa with lasers.
Yeah.
None of them are attractive enough that I would watch that for 8 seasons. I mean, I don't know.
Travis Taylor? Come on.
Well, I mean, he definitely is the looker of the crew.
Yeah.
You know, so there's that.
Erica did that thing with her voice where her voice got up and left the room.
Exactly. It's like, oh, God.
Close the door behind it.
Do I have to respond to that?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Cold-blooded, Erica. Appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. I've been told.
That's the one thing I thought about mentioning at some point, and I kind of forgot about it. But this is like, this is dude heavy. It's not just like mostly man. It's like dudes. And yeah. I don't know if these people like listen to Joe Rogan and be like, we got to get some of that sweet Rogan energy on our show. But it sort of has that feel to me of these like somewhat new agey, but, you know, men's men type of thing, like ground and pound energy.
Well, I mean, I guess, I mean, maybe they've taken some acting classes.
That could be.
I mean, yeah. It wouldn't be evident, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. There's a kind of 21st century, you know, manosphere-ish, spiritual, gun-loving thing. You know, we're just asking questions, school of thought. But also, since asking questions tends to be so queer, we also got to show you that we're very tough. And you can in 2025 or whichever year this was, you can be both things. You can ask dumbass questions and you can carry a gun at the same time. In fact, that may be a lot of America these days.
Yes, exactly. I think you hit that on the head.
They've really connected with the zeitgeist. Erica, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
For coming on. This is really fun. And it was great talking to you. You have so much knowledge about this stuff. And I think it's kind of helpful in sort of understanding exactly what is going on, or more importantly, what is not going on at Skinwalker Ranch.
Erica, where can people find you?
At expandingfrontiersresearch.org is the best place. So that is our website, and you can find us there.
Great. Well, thank you, Erica.
Thank you.
This has been More Like Ancient Phalians. I'm Brandon R. Reynolds.
I'm Toby Ball.
And we'll see you next time.
Have you ever run into a really smart kid? Yeah? Well, did you stop to wonder if maybe they were a human-alien hybrid? If not, you should really listen next week as we discuss The Star Children with Sarah Carradine. That's Season 7, Episode 3. The Pythagorean Theorem? Maybe not Pythagoras. Just saying.
More Like Ancient Phalians is produced by Grab Bag Colab, and our editor and producer is Heather Eagle Ears Wilson. Our music is by Nathan Reedy.